The views and opinions expressed by guests in the Discover America podcast did not necessarily reflect the views of Prince Nestor.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Discover America with Prince Nestor. I'm Prince Nestor, and right now, I'm urging you to fasten your seatbelt, sit back, relax, and enjoy. I'm gonna be featuring an international poet who explores issues like race, gender, class, identity, and immigration in her poetry. And I talked to the charming storyteller immediately after her performance in Nevada.
A letter of apology from myself, Brock Turner's victim, and any woman who's ever survived sexual assault. I'm sorry. No, truly, I am. I'm sorry for so many things to so many people through so many times, but most of all, I'm sorry I believe these lies. I guess it should come as no surprise that the right to my body is a social disguise based on the notion that a man has a right to anything in his eyes, from my thighs to my hair, and no, not my dreads, but the ones down there, as long as my skirt was short enough to invite him to stare. So, I'm sorry. I apologize for this disguise that I put on, but I'm so glad you knew it was meant to turn you on, because the clothes that I wear have no significance to me as a human being. Rather, they're meant for you to define me by what you're seeing. Believing my hemline determines my inner
being. Her poetry is unique, rhythmic, and has a Midas touch. And when Wende performs, she often leaves her audience in awe as they scream and beg for more. And not to mention that her performance is often met with a standing ovation.
And he really won't. Now, I'm not sure if my apology is coming off entirely too sincerely, so let me take a minute to break it down for y'all a little bit more clearly. This apology is a symptom of a social disease seen from football rosters in Ohio to buses in New Delhi, with outbreaks of slut-shaming and victim-blaming mentalities and no cure in sight under this current system of patriarchy. We've got invisible wars leaving visible scars on members of our nation's military, and don't get me started on what the hell is going on politically. See, I'd write my local politician, but he's probably taking the lead on defining rape in terms of words such as legitimacy.
Bang, 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 I should have warned you in advance that her poetry is hard-hitting. But well, folks, get ready for a bombshell, because in the next 15 minutes or so, Mwende Katwiwa, popularly known as Frequency, is gonna be taking us through her American story right here on Discover America with Prince Nestor. Stay tuned, we'll be right back. Welcome back. You are tuned in to Discover America with Prince Nestor. The scintillating instrumental on the background is by Blue Dot Sessions. The track is called Vanille, taken from the album The Sweethearts. I'm Prince Nestor, and thanks for tuning in.
And then I discovered the women that looked like me were remnants of caricatures. Jezebels who jumped from their towers and landed booty first in hip-hop scenes. Aunt Jemima mammies who took off their aprons and donned their crowns as welfare queens. If only we had a woman to give to our daughters as role models, we begged and pleaded. Lifted our faces to the heavens, asking the gods to send us the she that we needed when... Look up in the sky! It's a bird! It's a plane! It's a strong black woman!
My guest today is 26-year-old Mwende Katwiwa, popularly known as Frequency, who refers to herself as a queer black immigrant and was also ranked third at the 2015 Individual World Poetry Slam competition. I'm so honored to have you in studio right now.
Thank you for inviting me.
You don't have to mention it, the pleasure is all mine. You're a Kenyan immigrant living in the United States. Tell me, when did you come to the United States?
Came to the U.S. in the mid-1990s, I believe 1996, yes. So came when I was small. My parents had come for to study here in the U.S.
Oh, nice. Where are you based here in the U.S.?
I'm currently based in New Orleans, Louisiana, because it's warm.
It's warm.
It's like Mombasa.
Oh, yeah. So for those who don't know, Mombasa is a coastal city in Kenya. It has a very warm weather, and tourists from different parts of the world actually love the city because of its beautiful beaches and warm weather. So, Frequency, what exactly do you do?
I'm a poet. I write, I perform, I do workshops, also run an after-school program for black girls in New Orleans around leadership development, social justice education, and, you know, being in community with one another.
Oh, nice. How is it being an artist and, in your case, being a poet here in the U.S.?
I think it's interesting to be an artist anywhere and have that be your profession. Unless you're a more, you know, a popular mainstream artist, people tend to question why you're doing it, is it worth it, you know, whatever, whatever. But both here in the U.S. and even when I'm in Nairobi, poetry is what I do. It's how I communicate with people. I like to call myself a storyteller and a writer, because that is what I do. I also write articles and different things, not just poetry. And much of the poetry is based in storytelling. So,
Mwende has mastered the art of storytelling in an artistic manner. And when she does her thing, no one, and I repeat, no one, is spared.
Growing up, my parents didn't let me watch bad movies. So for the most part, it was Disney princess cartoons. But the older I grew, the more I knew Disney had shown me some things that were quite disturbing in reality, like how Beauty and the Beast is about a 17-year-old being sexually harassed until she's kidnapped and Stockholm syndrome into bestiality, or like how Sleeping Beauty was supposed to make me believe that I should be excited if a man sneaks into my room to kiss me while I'm asleep, like that's what I should consider romantic or consenting or future husband material. And speaking of future husband material, let me tell you a little secret the Little Mermaid whispered to me, that by the age of 16, I should be willing to give up my voice and my family for a man who would take another woman to the altar because she could sing. But the thing that really set me off was that lame attempt at racial retribution they call the Princess and the Frog, because apparently a black girl can only pretend to be a princess and only for a half hour long. We have the gall to show these images to our daughters in their most formative stages of growth without realizing that for 2 hours, we just let Mickey Mouse bitch slap them with the remote.
I'm Prince Nesta on Discover America with Prince Nesta. Stay tuned. Frequency and I will be right back.
So I dedicate this poem that I'm about to read to you all to Sandra Bland and to all the black women victims of state violence who we have not known, who we do not know. And I hope that you all go home today and we start to know those women and we start to speak their stories and we refuse to stop speaking them until these things stop happening to them. I keep trying to figure out how I got myself here. See, the last thing I remember, I was driving down a bland Texas highway. I admit, I switched lanes with no notice. I was smoking a cigarette, which I knew, of course, would kill me. Eventually, I just never imagined for the life of me, or at least the life that used to be inside of me, that it would lead to my death like this. I asked him why I was being arrested. I asked him why I was being arrested. I asked him why I was being arrested, and then I asked him 11 more times. Last year, they told me a man in Staten Island killed himself with a noose made of police officers' arms. They said he died after saying, "I can't breathe," 13 times. I guess I should have known better. Should have known not to go all broken record, not to repeat myself like history. Should have known how quick they'd be to Victor White me, how they would stop search and arrest me, then still have the nerve to claim I killed myself with something I smuggled in for him, a gun for me, a large pile of weed. They said I smoked my way into an early grave inside of one of their jail cells.
That's my guest, Mwende Frequency Katuiwa, boldly addressing issues of black women victims of state violence who we have not known and who we don't know, and specifically addressing the case of Sandra Bland, a 28-year-old black woman who was found hung in a jail cell in Texas on 2015, 3 days after being arrested during a traffic stop.
Tears black mothers cry over the kin they birth in their own image. And I admit, I did not expect a single one of you to hear the sounds that came from my mother's throat, yet somehow in my death she was given a megaphone mouth to mourn with.
I'm Prince Nesta. Welcome to Discover America with Prince Nesta. Gosh, you're too talented, Mwende. I wanna be like you when I grow up. Did you study poetry in school?
I did not study poetry. I've actually never studied poetry.
Wow.
It's also so funny to me when people call me a poet. I'm like, I've never taken a poetry class. I don't even know a lot of forms of poetry. I just write and read other poets, you know? But when I was in university, I studied political economy with international perspectives. And then I got the dual degree at the same time in Africa and African diaspora studies.
My voice to do it, and this is the place I keep trying to figure out how I got myself to. Because I can't shake the feeling if I could just remember what it is I did to make you all remember me.
Even Frequency also informed me that she always had a passion for stories, but not necessarily poetry. That when she was in grade 6, her mom took her to a poetry performance. And that's what sparked her automatic interest in poetry. She also attributed her fascination with speaking different languages, including her Kamba native language, Swahili, and English, as one of those things that catalyzed her interest in poetry. So, Frequency, what does poetry mean to you, and what exactly does your poetry stand for?
On a personal level, it's a way for me to process the things that are going on in my life or outside of my life that are impacting me, and it's a way for me to make sense of the world, I think. Form of activism as well, I think, you know, that writing is a political act. It's something that can be used, you know, as a tool against different oppressions and injustices. Again, just processing the world around me, you know? So that means figuring out and seeing the world as somebody who's black, as somebody who's an immigrant, as somebody who's an African, as somebody who's a woman, as somebody who's queer, and how all of those things intersect with one another at different times or in different places. There's a saying that the personal is political. So if you're doing personal explanation and you are in a politicized body, then you will be, you know, doing political exploration.
Wow, I feel so blessed right now in studio. Both of us are from Kenya. Is there a particular poem that you've done for Kenyans or for the African continent? And can you do it right now on Discover America with Prince Nesta?
Okay.
Right.
I'll do the one. It's called The Gospel of Colonization.
Let's go.
When I was a girl, my family emigrated from Kenya to the United States. New country, new people, new language, but the one thing that remained was the presence of my Savior, Jesus Christ. This didn't surprise me. I grew up knowing my God was everywhere, that He saw everything. I believed Him to be a benevolent being whose image I was created in. Even as I looked up at His portrait that was hanging in so many Kenyan homes, a frame full of blonde hair, pink and pale skin, eyes, a light blue piercing enough to draw blood, an image so holy, but one that did not allow me to see myself in my Creator. But as a child, it didn't matter. I believed in the Word of God. I read it like a love letter that He wrote me. I saw the preacher as the postman speaking deliverance each service until one day, in Sunday school, we were wrapping English Bibles for poor kids in Botswana, and I wondered, in what language did God listen? Did He hear my prayers clearly in Swahili? Did He hear me better now that my amens were sent up in a foreign man's tongue? A foreign man whose face looked more like his blue-eyed son I'd seen growing up. I thought maybe we sent English Bibles because His ears, they tasted the sweet sound of prayer better when spoken in this tongue. I know, looking back, it sounds like a silly moment to start questioning your faith. But that day, I learned that once the seed of doubt is planted, its roots will always thirst. I began to read about God. Each page was like a raindrop of history. I lost my religion in floods of understanding, but I grew closer to divinity. And eventually, branches on that tree of doubt spread so wide that they blocked out even His divine light. It was around the same time that I realized that the poor kids I'd sent Bibles to, they were poor. Partly because of how that Bible had been used. See, when the missionaries came to Africa, Christianity swept our lands like a biblical plague. Our firstborns were smothered under the cover of night. Our waters, they flowed red and full, swollen like the bodies of stolen daughters. We were left in the darkness of colonization for 8 decades. We became a continent of Jobs, promised salvation but seeing suffering tenfold. From those who came claiming grace but belting gospels of genocide. From those who beat tradition from elder tongues and called it tithe. From those who called losing our culture a tax for finding salvation in Christ. And ain't it funny how they used their God to justify the taking of what ours had blessed us with for centuries.
how they claimed to introduce God to our lands when our lands birthed even their humanity. See, Jomo Kenyatta once said, when the missionaries arrived, the Africans had the land, and the missionaries had the Bible. They taught us how to pray with our eyes closed. And when we opened them, they had the land, and we had the Bibles. Do you see how swiftly they pull wool from the Lamb of God over our eyes? The greatest lie colonialism ever told was that it brought God to Africa. Yes, they brought their Bibles, but they did not bring God to our lands. Yes, they brought their churches, but they did not bring God to our lands. Yes, they brought their guns, but they did not bring God to our lands. What they brought was an image made to justify the breaking of our bodies like communion bread, a false idol that to this day I still see hanging in so many Kenyan homes, a frame full of blonde hair, pink and pale skin, eyes, a light blue piercing enough to draw blood, to have already drawn blood.
Good stuff. I just don't know how to describe this. You are incredibly talented, and you must have been feeling in some type of way to write this stuff. What inspired such deep thoughts?
It's because every time I go to see my parents, I stopped going to church for a few years now, but every time I would go home to see my parents, you know, just out of habit and even just out of respect, I would find myself going to church with them.
Yeah.
Because I would usually go to visit on the weekends.
Yeah.
And I would just sit there in church and just get this urge to write.
Wow.
So that poem was actually written over the course of like a year.
Yeah.
And I wrote it when I was in church the whole time.
Of writing deep stuff like this has never crisscrossed my mind in church. Let me ask you, would you write any stuff as deep as a poem in church? Talk to me. I'm Prince Nesta on Facebook, on Twitter at Prince Nesta, and on Instagram at Prince Nesta Radio. Well, grab a glass of wine. Let's take a break. Frequency and I will be right back. Well, welcome back, folks. You're on Discover America with Prince Nesta, where I'm sharing my journey and experiences in the United States as I compare it to that of my own African culture. And right now in studio, I'm joined by an international poet, Mwende Frequency Katwiwa, 26-year-old Kenyan immigrant living in the United States, and who addresses issues such as gender, feminism, equality, and immigration issues in her poems. Mwende, what do you think makes your poems special?
I don't know. I don't know if it's particularly special. I think it's just work that's necessary. I don't believe in writing for the sake of entertaining people. I believe in writing because things need to be said. Words create worlds, so we have to be very intentional about what we choose to put into our writing and what we choose to share with other people.
Mwende, now that you address issues of gender, sexuality, what are some of the challenges you face as a woman in the poetry scene?
You know, the way I show up in different places, I think people are challenged by my presence. And when I say people, I'm usually actually just saying men. I think I show up in masculine ways sometimes, or ways that people think are traditionally reserved for men.
Mm-hmm.
I get sexualized very often by men. Even in the poetry scene back home, which is something that I'm active in and I go around, I've had some confrontations and, you know, clashes with people just because there are certain ways that I think we've normalized the treatment of women that some women, myself included, just do not stand for. And then if you stand against it, you get labeled, oh, you're crazy or this. Or my favorite is that's when now people say, oh, that's the Western side, that's the American side.
Yeah.
So they like to claim everything until it goes against them. Then they say, that's whatever.
Sticks and stones break bones, but being grown has torn my soul to pieces. There are stark differences in gender roles when you grow up on a Kenyan farm. No time for dolls when there are coffee beans to be picked. Western femininity overshadowed by traditional sentiments that in my youthful bliss didn't have me feeling like less. But with one simple flight, this was soon doomed to change. When I left my grandma's farm and boarded that plane, I thought things would be the same or better like on TV. I couldn't wait to start my new life in the land of opportunity. But they called me a tomboy, an ugly heishi, told me to go back to my country. And instead of a melting pot, all I got was judgment based on what the eye could see, and a nation I no longer wanted because it did not see me. My teen years were brutal, and I mean that in every sense of the word. It was far easier to hide from the world before puberty took control, I learned. I yearned for the punchline of the two cruel jokes developing on me, letting everyone know I transformed into a woman through my changing body. So that was that. The pain of phase one was finally done. I checked myself into social rehab and ironically wound up drunk, high off the society that made me believe that I needed to add more to be a better me. And in came the makeup, blonde braids and weaves, clothes so tight, painted on my body like a masterpiece. And I can't lie, I loved the attention when I thought it was for me until I realized it was aimed at sexualized parts of my body. It is still a daily personal struggle, or rather an all-out war waged on me by me, consisting of victories and battles versus you, or you. Or the next thing they promote is beauty, that's true. You see, I sometimes still actively roam the battlefield at night, dressed in my full armor, consisting of short skirts and crop tank tops, looking at other girls thinking they've tanked and I'm on top. But it's a sad, lonely you when all you've got is the view from the top of an underwater mountain. I find myself drowning in trivial comparisons until I give up my armor just to be personally content. And yet, it is a universal struggle for a woman to achieve beauty. The main reason being that word has no true meaning, but they trick us into believing we are nothing more than words like pretty, reducing us to judgments that are shallow and petty, turning my sisters and I from queens into pawns, striving for a crown that we all already have on. So now, if anyone tells me I'm beautiful, I take it with a grain of sadness, because it means that there is someone somewhere out there that they view as something less. And the sad thing is I've gotten used to assuming that it's me until I find myself conforming to norms of femininity, because I am my shoulder length hair, my moisturized skin, and your plucked eyebrow painted nailed expectations. Even though I try and act like wearing flannel shirts has taken me to mental elevation, I still subject myself to personal degradation, because even with these glasses on, I've been conditioned for so long to only see my imperfections. But beauty is not in the eye of the beholder, nor is it even skin deep. It is a fluid social construct that is manipulated to keep us weak, kept from the strengths of our individuality, that brings this poetic critique to this tragic irony. If I had to choose between always being what society considered beautiful or just fighting the battle to be what you see, to this very day, I'm not sure I would choose to remain as me.
Oh my goodness. Incredible stuff. But Wende, as you sit here and you're saying all these fancy things in the poem, inspirational, and you're fighting all these battles, your own parents' land, your grandmother's land, Kenya, is always going through political instabilities after every election year. What message can you tell the Kenyan youth, especially those from your generation?
If there's something I can say to Kenyans, is I wish that we would just explore more of our history and the history of the continent in general, to think more about Pan-Africanism, to think more about Black consciousness, and just because, you know, we have a Black president or a Kenyan president doesn't necessarily mean that we're decolonized. And so to really think about what are the differences between receiving independence and decolonization, what is neocolonization, what is Pan-Africanism, what is Black consciousness, how are all those things related and connected, and what role do we have to play right now in this generation to make sure that we continue the legacy of struggle that we are coming from.
As a radio entertainer, and I've been doing this for quite a while now, for around 8 years, it's always challenging to entertain a crowd. No matter how hard you try to entertain them, there's always someone somewhere who doesn't get satisfied. Do you find it easy to entertain a crowd?
For me, it's I don't care if 99% of the audience didn't like it. If there's someone there that comes up to me and says, "You've made me think in a different way," then that becomes worth it for me. I think it's hard sometimes because people want you to be like a jukebox or something just for entertainment as a poet, and that's not what it is for me. Mm-hmm. You know, poetry is not entertainment, it's a political act. And so, you know, there's been different times where people have tried to silence my voice on different platforms. I don't know if I consider those low moments or moments where I have to put my poetry into action and remember that it's not just pretty words that I'm writing on a page.
You gotta be a little bit specific with me. Which particular performance left you a little bit disappointed?
So there's a TED talk that I gave the TED Women's Conference last year. So it was an interesting experience because they had asked me to to cut out the Black Lives Matter portion of my talk, and I just didn't. Go ahead and watch the talk, and you can even hear some poetry in there.
For sure. Well, Mwende has given us permission to watch her TED Talk controversial performance, which was released in February 2018. And I'm playing it courtesy of the TED page on YouTube. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on Discover America with Prince Nesta.
Yesterday during rehearsal, when I was told that I should maybe cut the Black Lives Matter portion from my talk, I found myself fearful for a moment. Fearful that again, our stories were being denied the very stages they deserve to be told on. And then I remembered the words I had just spoken. In times of dread, artists must never choose to remain silent. There is no time for self-pity. There is no time for self-pity and no room for fear. And I have made my choice, and I am always choosing. Thank you.
Well, I hope that you're enjoying yourself, folks. As I keep on sharing my journey in the United States of America. And right now, I'm joined in studio by Mwende Frequency Katwiwa, originally from Kenya but resides in the United States. I'm Prince Nesta, and welcome to Discover America with Prince Nesta. Mwende, as we finish, what do you do during your free time?
I sleep. Oh, I sleep a lot. I don't get a lot of free time.
You're pretty busy.
Mm-hmm.
I totally understand because I'm pretty busy myself. Lastly, any parting shot?
Just do your part, you know. It makes the work a lot easier if everybody is working on it.
Mwende, I know you're tired from your busy schedule and your thrilling performance in Nevada, but thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Remember, you can follow Mwende on Instagram at Mwendas in Suspenders. You can also follow her on Facebook at Mwende Frequency Katwiwa. And finally, you can also follow her on Twitter at FreeQ the Mighty. Well, that's it, folks. I actually got to learn a lot as far as matters race, gender, equality, reproductive health, and poetry in the United States is concerned. I also hope that you enjoyed yourself on Discover America with Prince Nesta. You know, and I know, that I know, that you don't know, that the next episode is even gonna be hotter, because I'm gonna be trying to understand the Americans' fascination with their own pets, especially dogs. You don't wanna miss that particular episode only on Discover America with Prince Nesta. You can find me at Prince Nesta on Facebook, at Prince Nesta on Twitter, and at Prince Nesta Radio on Instagram. Special shout-outs to my executive producer, Nico Colombant. Thank you so much for the support that you've been giving me. Till next time, don't be a fool. Protect your tool.
Growing up, I heard all about the joys of motherhood. I used to dream of watching my womb weave wonder into this world. See, I knew I was young, but I figured it couldn't hurt to start planning for something so big, so early. But now, I'm 26 years old, and I don't know if I have what it takes to stomach motherhood in this country. See, over the years, America has taught me more about parenting than any book on the subject. It has taught me how some women give birth to babies and others to suspects. It has taught me that this body will birth kin who are more likely to be held in prison cells than to hold college degrees. There is something about being Black in America that has made motherhood seem complicated.